Comadres y Comics, a podcast hosted by three Latina women who focus on Latinx presence in the comic book industry with a special focus on strong female characters and creators.
All right, guys, welcome to Comadres y Comics, episode number 26. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Hey, guys, welcome back.
Yay! Yay.
So, initially, we did not mean to take any time off during the holiday season.
Yes.
We were going to power through and record, but then our mixer took a crap, and then we got a new one, but then we still couldn't get it together according to schedule, so we just decided to take just the holiday break.
Yeah.
So we're back, guys. Sorry about that. We should have said something, but
it was totally not planned.
Yeah, it was not planned.
But we're back.
Yes, but we're back, and that's what's important. So how are you guys doing? What was the holiday like for you? What's going on?
I'm glad the holidays are over. The holidays are all always super busy for me. This particular holiday, contributing to me not trying, this is Kristen, to me having a hard time finding time to meet up with you guys, is that my mother, obviously unplanned, came to visit for Christmas. That was not the unplanned part. The unplanned part was that she, the second day she was here, was hauled away in an ambulance. She's okay. It was nothing life-threatening. She had a really bad reaction to some antibiotics she was taking, but at the time we didn't know that that's what was happening. So she was here for a week, and four of those days she spent in the hospital. So, and then after that,
happy holidays.
Yeah, after that, I got super sick, and so, yeah, that, but, I mean, we made the best of it, and we had a great holiday nonetheless, so.
Yeah. Cool, well, it's 2018. It still doesn't feel like 2018, and like, you know, all these things were like, let's
time is a lie. Reality is fake.
You know what?
Give it up.
This whole week, I feel like I've lived like 6 months already in this week. Like, it feels like 2018 plus some to me. And I shared something on Facebook. I think you guys saw that. I'm just like, this first month is just like a trial.
I've decided
to not start my 2018 until February 1st.
It's a good policy to have, because I have, just today at work, I have single-handedly had to stop myself from killing at least three customers.
Wow.
It's Kristen was there for one of them.
Yes. Like, I was not going to stop her.
She would not have stopped me. I was about to reach over the counter and drag that man. Oh, God. But yeah, when January is a trial, the entire... My holidays were all right. They were classic Latino holidays, you know. The women cook. The men get drunk. I steal some money from somebody.
I like it.
It was just like, it's typical holidays. I'm kind of used to them by now. I made some bomb-ass lasagna, though.
Nice.
So, and, that's meatloaf. A typical Italian holiday.
And close enough.
Nice.
But, yeah, my mom made tamales, so there's that. I just wanted something different. And also, my mom made tamales only after she came back from working and delivering tamales to all the people who had ordered. So, we needed something in between and something that was relatively easy-ish to make. So, it was meatloaf. New Year's was lasagna. Mm. Yeah. So... ta-da. There's nothing very exciting. I did get sick.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got sick. I hardly ever get sick. There was that one time, I guess, like I recorded while I was sick.
Oh, yeah.
And my head was pretty much on the table throughout the entire thing. But this was... It wasn't that it was a brief sickness, but I was just, like, majorly sick for one day, and then I was slowly recovering throughout it. I'm still kind of recovering. I just can't hear out of one ear.
Oh, my. That sucks. I hear that the season is going to be really bad this year.
Yeah.
And it's just starting according to...
Oh, didn't they just release a report that like 15 people have died
from the flu?
Right? I'm just like, my God. Just get the fucking flu shot. Oh, my God. Like,
I'm one of those people who don't get it, so...
Yeah, I don't get it either. I don't have insurance.
But in my defense, we are not within the demographic that is high risk.
Oh, true. Good. I'm happy to hear that.
And I mean, the flu shot itself is pretty cheap, like at a Walgreens.
Yeah, it's like $25 or something.
$25.
Yeah. Some, I see signs all the time for free shots.
Yeah, free, like flu shots and stuff like that. Mm. You just have to.
My
like,
friend actually was in the hospital a couple of months now. And we were joking and laughing because every single person, from the doctor to the nurse to the phlebotomist to the person who was bringing her red Jell-O to her after her dinner, was pushing the freaking flu shot like it was. And she was like, is this like some kind of cult or something? Like, she felt so uncomfortable at how aggressively they were trying to push it on
her. And yeah. As a matter of fact, in healthcare facilities like hospitals and so forth, it's not an option. If you're an employee, you have to have it.
Yeah, well, that makes sense to me.
If you work with kids, you have to have it. Yeah. You have to have the flu shot and stuff like that. And even then, like, I got mine like a couple weeks ago. And then I got violently sick. But I wasn't. On the plus side, I wasn't sick for longer. So it's in effect. You know how that works? Like, dang. Nice. But because I'm just used to it. And I forked over the $20 and stuff like that. Because it's the flu shot.
Do you have dragon earrings on?
No, they're quetzales. What's
ooh.
That?
The feathered serpent?
No, that's a Quetzalcoatl. No, this is the Quetzal bird, the national bird of Guatemala.
Oh, that's very nice.
Oh, those are cool. Mm. I like that.
Where my dad lives, he lives very close to the, like, like the jungle,
uh-huh.
And so that's literally the only way I can see is the jungle. And so when I was at his house, every once in a while you would see one of these.
Uh-huh.
They're kind of hard to find.
Interesting.
So to spot, and it's just like you would usually have to get deep into the jungle or something like that. But I saw a few of them.
This is beautiful.
Oh, it's really nice.
I really like that a lot.
I bought it in Guatemala a couple years ago.
Oh, they're very nice. They're very nice.
I want something cutesy like that to represent my culture and heritage.
Hint.
You're gonna see me with a beer can saying you know my ear loves.
I'm pretty sure they make Tecate earrings.
What? You don't know about me if you think I'll be wearing Tecate earrings.
Fine, modelo.
Wow.
Is there a classy Mexican beer that I am not aware of that exists?
That's the point. Sorry, I don't drink Mexican beer.
Makes sense.
But anyways, what was I saying?
I interrupted you. That you were sick and then you weren't sick and you took your shot.
I took my shot, yeah. How did we diverge this far?
I know.
I don't know, but Sarah, how was your holidays? Yeah.
They were really good. We get together and we play video games. We play games until midnight.
You open presents at midnight?
We go to my aunt's house, so we do like a white elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And so we play that game. So yeah, consecutively throughout the night we open presents and stuff. But it's really a lot of fun. It gets really competitive. She has this ball that she wraps presents with.
Oh, yeah. The big cellophane thing,
yes,
game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun.
And the next person's rolling the dice.
Yes.
And yeah, that looks like fun.
Yeah. So this next, she's already planning for next year.
How big is the ball?
It's, the size of a steering wheel.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. I actually got a McDonald's gift card. And from rolling out and then I think two lottery tickets. So it was a lot of fun.
That's cool.
And then we had a contest, a Christmas hat contest. So we were encouraged to make our own Christmas hat,
mm-hmm.
themed hat, and then take it. And then my cousin has one of those mini Polaroid cameras. So we all took pictures of all of us wearing our hats and numbered it. And then throughout the night you can vote.
Oh.
So, I actually won first place.
Ooh.
I'm very excited.
What was the theme of your hat?
My hat was the Ghost of Christmas Present, the wreath with the candles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I made my candles out of, I saved my toilet paper rolls. And then I used those little tea lights that.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And then I painted it, and then I melted you know, like a glue gun,
yeah.
but it looked like wax, and then I painted them white, and then, so it looked really cool.
Jeez, you put a lot of effort. You deserve to win.
Yeah.
And my husband won second place, and I made his hat. It was a giant, it was a giant present. So he had a big box on his head, with, this humongous bow and stuff. It looked really nice. I put some holly leaves and stuff.
I already have an idea for a hat. It's NSFW, so I'm as I'm wont to be.
So that was a lot of fun. And then on New Year's, we decided not to go out. And so I've had my Christmas tree in the backyard for a year. So, like, you know, we have a Christmas tree, and then I put it in the backyard, and then it dries out. And then we cut it for firewood. So the new tradition is burning the last year's Christmas tree every New Year. So that's like our new tradition now. We're going to get a bottle of champagne and then just wait. Besides, we live in Combs, so we have fireworks.
Yes.
We have gunshots.
Yes.
And so
what's a bonfire? Like, it's just like it's perfectly fine. Perfectly
acceptable. And, you know, we already have the background noise happening. Yes. Like so it becomes very festive. It was just three of us, my husband, my brother, and myself.
Uh-huh.
His girlfriend had to work. She was working at Disneyland. So so she wasn't around, but I said, hey, do you want to join us? We're gonna have a bonfire. So, you know, we were watching TV, and then we were kind of waiting for a perfect time to go outside. And then we were there for 2 hours, and then we just went to sleep. So it was pretty good.
Well, that's your New Year's story reminds me of my awesome New Year's that I had, going to go see Third Eye Blind for the first time live.
Yes.
Oh, my God. It was so amazing. I loved it. I loved it so much that I went home and I immediately tried to search when they were going to be in concert again, and found out that they were going to be in concert the next night in San Diego, and actually looked to see if there were any tickets available, because I was like, Eddie, we're driving to San Diego so we can go again. Oh my gosh, they were so good. They are my favorite 90s band, and they were everything I wanted them to be.
That's awesome. That's great. I'm glad that
they have a countdown and everything.
Yes.
In
the middle of his song, he stopped. And actually, I was recording that song, and so I got it on video. But he stopped and he counted down, and then he made like this huge speech about like loving each other and like. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who may not know, Third Eye Blind was invited to sing. I think it was at a campaign party that Trump had, and they went and they sung all of their songs that are like Jumper is about a personal friend of his that I don't know if he committed suicide or tried to commit suicide because he had like some inner turmoil stuff. He was gay, and so like there was a lot of stuff that was going on.
Uh-huh.
And so he actually talked about the story that led up to the writing of the song, and like every single song they did, that they would talk about like social justice to the point that the people actually started booing them and stuff. And so like ever since hearing that story, I was like, they are like, I don't know what's more than my favorite band, but they're more than that. That like they totally, not just being super talented in songwriting and singing and everything and playing musically, but also my favorite band just for doing that on Trump's campaign trail. So,
yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. That's a good story. That's really cool. I didn't know that about them, so it's cool.
Yeah.
Excellent, guys. So guess what, everybody? We have an iTunes
review. Yay!
Get that applause.
After so long.
I know, we've been asking for you guys to, and you know what? And I'm mad now.
How did that happen?
We've been asking, we've been begging. Not even my freaking husband has gone on there to do a review. Like, or yours, Sarah.
Or
like,
my cousin.
Yes.
Like, what's up, G? Like, oh my God.
Like, isn't that some kind of mandate? Like, isn't it in the paperwork? I'm mad now. I'm going to go home. I'm going to walk in and he's going to be like, hi. He calls me Sweet D. He's going to say, hi, Sweet T's home. I'll be like, I'm mad at you.
Okay. This review was in October.
Yes.
So
it's our bad.
Sorry about that. But you see, we had already lost hope, so we weren't even talking anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you on that one. I was as surprised as you are. But isn't there a thing where, like, you submit your review and then it goes...
It has to be approved or something. Yes. Yes, you're right.
So I'm thinking maybe it was a month before the hit appeared, so by that time we had lost all hope. Yes.
So it was posted October 25th, 2017 by Buddy Blue, and it says it's 5 stars.
Ooh,
thank you.
Yes. That translates to 3 conchas, the compa champurrado, and a side of, I don't know what.
A side of sex.
I can't think of anything else.
It was just sex. You should have said a blowjob. for those interested in dating. But the review reads, I love these ladies. It's so nice to have a perspective from the Latinx community. Love these women and how much fun they have. And their knowledge of all things geek runs deep. Definitely check it out.
Yay!
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You guys, you just made our day, our week, our month.
Definitely. That was very, very sweet.
So guess what? You win a prize. And we would love to give it to you. So if you're still listening to us, please contact us either via Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. Contact us, and that way we can get your gift or
yes.
your prize over to you ASAP. Mm-hmm.
Buddy Blue, please do so. Hopefully you are still listening.
Yeah.
and you reach out to us and get your prize.
Yes.
And thank you. Yes. Thank you so much for
thank
your
you
awesome
very, very
review.
Much.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for taking the time, because I've tried to post reviews on other people's podcasts,
mm-hmm.
but if I'm not, like, on one of my Apple devices, it keeps kind of, like, asking for verification, and it gets frustrating, and I just give up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So what I'm going to do now is type it on my regular desktop, send it via Messenger to my iPad, and from there I'll post it.
Oh, okay.
Because it's just hard to type like everything I want to say on an
phone,
iPad,
yeah,
or a phone, and so that's what I'm gonna do. But yeah, it can be frustrating.
And that's what all you listeners can do as well when you're leaving the very next Comodacy Comics reviews on iTunes.
Yeah.
I like that. So thank you so much for that review, and please contact us to get your present ASAP. We can't wait to send it to you and then hear back from you. It'd be great.
Yes.
So,
and just to clarify, this we are giving you a present, could be super appreciated. It's not a payoff.
If it was a payoff, it would have been a blowjob.
Oh my gosh. Can we delete that out and post off? I mean, post up. Post production.
Post production.
Oh, you guys. That's terrible. Let's just move on along. I'm trying to, I'm super red right now. Did you guys watch Coco?
Yes.
I have watched it twice. How many times did you guys watch it?
I've only seen it once. Tried to go back to see it during the holidays, and in fact was going to take my niece and my mother to go see it, but womp womp, I already shared with you that my mom was in the hospital, so we never got to go to see Coco. I ended up taking my niece to the movies, but we didn't want to see Coco without my mom, and at the time we didn't realize my mom was going to be in the hospital for so long, so we opted to see Jumanji, which I highly recommend. I saw the original, I love the original. Obviously Robin Williams was great in that movie, but this is super fun, super funny, all of the comedians. I've never seen The Rock in a comedic role, I don't think. And I know that he does them and that he's known for that, but I've never seen him in one. And so I was super kind of surprised at it. But, yes, go see Jumanji. But, yes, just to I'm getting off track with movies. But I've only seen it once, and I wanted to see it a second time in Spanish, but I didn't. I haven't gone back yet.
Can I ask what was your favorite part, Kristen?
Of Coco?
Mm-hmm.
My favorite part. I mean, the part that stands out the most to me is the revelation that it's of who Miguel's real father is.
Well, grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Or grandfather, yeah. Great-grandfather.
Great, yeah.
I don't know how many greats, but there's some greats in there. Two greats.
And, oh my gosh, like, I just, like, started bawling my little eyes out, and I don't think I... From that point to till the end, there was just one scene after another that that made me cry. But I think that, yeah, that was one of my favorite parts.
At one point in the movie, it was just tears running down my face. It was just like once like something started, it was like no stopping it.
Yeah.
And I went to go see it on New Year's Day with my mom and my baby sister because I wanted to go see it in Spanish at Crenshaw at the what used to be the Magic Johnson Theater. I think it's like Ray Cinemas.
Something like that now.
It's always the Magic Johnson to me. So we went to go see it because we thought it was in Spanish. Turns out it wasn't in Spanish. Mm. It was regular. But there wasn't my mom still understood it. But I was, oh my God, at one point, all three of us were crying.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and then like, I would look at the corner of my eye and I would see my little sister crying and then I would start crying again. And so it was just like, it was a hot mess of tears.
Nice.
And then she would start crying because she would see my mom crying. And so like, yeah, at one point we were just, all of us were crying.
And Mama Coco just, oh my gosh. So, when I was a young girl. I feel like I'd like dream sequence is about to start. But my grandmother took care of me a lot because my mother was a young mom and she was always out working and stuff and also partying because she was in her 20s at the time. But my grandmother was the oldest of her family. My great grandmother had 12 children, and my grandmother was the oldest. Mm-hmm. And so, in Latino families, as is often the tradition, my great grandmother was living with my grandmother because she was the oldest,
of course.
And she would. She was monolingual. She only spoke Spanish. And she would speak to me in Spanish. And I could understand her because she spoke to me all the time when I was a kid. But I always would reply in English. And so we kind of did that, like, communication back and forth and enough to understand each other. But she, for the most part, would just sit there in the corner in her little rocking chair, not really saying anything, kind of just sighing. Oh, my God. Down to the freaking...
Wrinkles?
Chin whiskers on Mama Coco, like when the close-ups, and yes, and the wrinkles, and just the clothing that they wore, it was like so just like the realisticness of the way they portray Latino families, and just how it resonated with me, with my great grandmother and my grandmother, was just like it really hit close to home, and was just so overwhelmingly emotional at the end.
I have to agree with that. We also, my grandmother lived with us, and then, but her mom was still alive, so with her siblings, they would each of them take care of her for a month. But she was actually very skinny and very frail, but down to like her eyes being closed all the time.
Yes.
Like and I really love this movie, the fact that they kind of put a spotlight on how important it is to validate elderly
yes.
people.
Uh-huh.
And even I was telling Jacob, my nephew, because the first time I saw it was in English with my nephew Jacob, and I said, you know, it just shows that even though they don't talk back,
mm-hmm.
you still should communicate with them.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. they might not be able to speak, but they're still there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think also the whole idea of passing down legacy
mm-hmm.
to people in the family that may have never met those people, but the stories that the older family members have of them, and just like, you know, passing down stories or anecdotes or even, you know, little items that used to be theirs or whatever, is so important for just history.
Mm-hmm.
Like my grandmother lived to 100, but the last year of her life, she was she wasn't responsive. She had a stroke and wasn't able to speak or respond. She was just in the hospital for about the last year
mm-hmm.
of her life. So even though she was technically alive to 100, we had her around only for about 99 years, but that is like amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories that my mother and I have of just being around her, and I was raised by her partly when I was a kid, and thinking about how my niece has met my grandmother, but she was young and then she passed away, and so she doesn't really get to have that interaction with her anymore, and the older she gets, she might forget about her. And like when she first passed away, my niece would say, oh, what about Grandma Toni? And she hasn't really done that much anymore, but I think a lot of times adults just stop talking about people who've passed away with children because it makes them feel uncomfortable, I think. And the story, Coco, really got me to start thinking about how that shouldn't be that way. It mm-hmm. should be the opposite, that you should still celebrate their life even though that they're gone, because it was a wonderful life, and it definitely has value to share that with mm-hmm. younger generations in the family.
Yeah,
I have to agree with that. And also one of the things that I really liked is like I know I've always wanted to talk to my nephew about, you know, the Day of the Dead celebration,
mm-hmm.
and I do make the altars not always on the day you're supposed to, which is bad on me,
mm-hmm.
but I never explained it to him, and I always felt that I would someday, but I never, you know, yeah. actively pursued that.
Not at the day you're supposed to. All your family members are there at the bridge, and they like, get turned away. Nope. She didn't make it this year either. Denied.
So this movie, it kind of opened my nephew's eyes to see like, hey, why aren't we doing that? And I'm like, oh, I did do it, but I did it late.
Uh-huh.
And what I do is like, we have, like a art show or a party.
Yeah.
And then we have a communal, altar. So everybody is encouraged to bring a photocopy of a picture of their loved one. Because I don't want to lose their original
yeah.
or have it damaged. Like
yeah.
if they bring a photocopy, then, you know, we'll frame it and put it up. So I have pictures of several people, like uncles and so forth, that cousins that I end up putting on the altar. But, you know, it's something that I didn't go into detail with my nephew. So now that he saw this movie, he asked me more about it.
Yeah.
And we talked more about it. And I just cried throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Just because it reminded me of my mom who's passed, and how I haven't been so diligent in putting up the altars, and
mm-hmm.
you know, like that may just be me feel guilty. The part where the dad is singing to his daughter. Oh my god. Fuck.
Remember yeah. me. You
know. Yeah, it's just so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just amazing just seeing the cameos of the artists that I grew up watching, like mm-hmm. Cantinflas,
mm-hmm.
Frida Kahlo,
Pedro Infante, yeah.
El Santo was
El
there,
Santo,
Maria
yeah.
Felix was mm-hmm. there, and I was like, I know that guy. So it was really fun to see that, and
mm-hmm.
the colorful pictures. pictures, the imagery and everything, it actually took 6 years of research going, traveling to Mexico before they started making this film. So that was really awesome. And I saw it in Spanish again in Pomona. We had to search for it because other movies had already come out. It was so that at that point they had they no longer had it here down the street, like at the Carson Cinemark, so we had to go to Pomona, but it was great. I got to take my husband to see it, and he liked it too. He was reluctant. He's like, I don't want to go see Coco. I want to go see, like, you know, Thor or something. And I'm like, but it's in Spanish, and it's so good, and I really wanted you to watch it. Mm-hmm. And it took for my aunt to say, let's all go together, for him to say, okay, fine, I'll go.
Yeah.
But he really enjoyed it too.
Good. Yeah, actually, on Tuesday of last week, I drove by the, was it Tuesday? Yeah. I drove by the, on Western in Gardena, the one screen theater that's over there right down the street from Jeffrey's. Mm-hmm. They're showing it in Spanish right now.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah.
Oh, I should have. That would have been such a... A small dive.
Yeah, Pomona's far.
I think I'm going to see if I can drag my mom and the rest of my siblings to go see that one in Spanish. But yeah, no, when we saw it, my mom actually immediately started getting teary-eyed at the beginning because for her it was like literally a blast from the past. That was the environment that she grew up in, and she was just like, it just reminds me of home. And I was just like, oh, fuck, I'm going to start crying.
Yeah.
And so when she told me that, I'm just like, oh, man, the tears are going to start coming. And so that's when she started crying. And then when she saw Mama Coco, actually started crying because she remembered her own grandmother.
Exactly.
And whatchamacallit, and she read, and I've always wanted to be more in touch with the Day of the Dead celebration.
Yeah.
And because my mom was telling me how, like, in Guatemala it's like a big thing, and that how she was to do it. But the reason that we haven't done it here is because all of our dead aren't here. All the dead are back in Guatemala, and the people that we do know who are dead, they're not our family. They're friends that we knew and stuff like that, and we go sometimes to visit their graves every once in a while.
Yeah.
Every once in a while is like every couple years kind of thing, whenever we remember. I was just like, isn't this person buried here? And we're just like, oh yeah, let's go visit it. And like flowers or something. But like, and nobody close to us has died that we can go and be like, visit and be like, and even then, when my godfather for Bautismo passed away, he was sent back to Mexico.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's what happens a lot with a lot of the older generation, too, is that they go back and they send them back. And I've always wanted to go see my godfather's grave because I miss him. I have a lot of memories of him, and my mom always says a lot of stuff about him as well. But I can't. I don't. I know he's buried somewhere in Chiapas, and Chiapas is far.
Mm. Oh yeah.
So,
yeah. Isn't that south? Really far south?
South. And so, but that's where he was from, and I can't go all the way to Chiapas. And I could, but but it's far, and I don't. It's a mission for sure, and I don't even. I just know that it's in Chiapas. Chiapas is big. There's a lot of graves and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I wish I was closer to that part of that. That's the part that, because I've always been aware of Dia de los Muertos, and I do know, and I have great respect for it, and I know my mom has more attachment to it than I do. But yeah, seeing Coco and seeing it all, I wish it made me realize that there's a large aspect of this that's part of my culture that I kind of don't. It's not that I don't know about it. It's just that I haven't been a participant of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and just seeing my mom, she was like, oh, that reminds me of home.
Yeah.
And her telling me like how when she was young, she would, what she would do, she used to sell flowers. And she says that she remembers that when it was Day of the Dead, she would sell a lot of marigolds and stuff like that. And how she has like a marigold bush when I went to Guatemala, it's still there. That marigold bush that she used to pluck her flowers from and sell on Day of the Dead. It's still there. It's just, it was a visually stunning. And my favorite scene was when, what's his name? Who?
The boy?
Miguel.
Miguel? Uh-huh. Was when Miguel sang the Remember Me song to Mama Coco.
Yes!
When he said it, and then when she starts singing back, and she,
yes.
Like,
oh my
and she
God.
Like wakes up, and I'm just like, oh my God, I was crying. I was
gonna cry right now.
Yeah. I'm getting like a little bit teary-eyed thinking about it. And I'm just like, and the day afterwards, I had to stop myself from crying in the store because I would just remember it.
And me too! Oh my God, for days, I would remember and just start, like, bawling, like where I couldn't breathe.
That was me in the movie theater. I was having trouble breathing because I was crying so hard.
Yeah.
And I wasn't the only bitch who was moving. Like, I was just like, it was me and like half the movie theater. You were just like,
yes,
in tears.
Yesterday I went to Disneyland and, Tough to Be a Bug movie theater in California Adventure. Oftentimes they have, like special engagement previews. And right now they have Coco there. And usually in the little waiting section, they'll have like, props from the movie and different things that are there. Like when Ant-Man was down there, they had like some of the costumes and, some of the other Marvel movies. Well, they have Coco there right now and they had shrines down there. And
beautiful.
One of them was, had a picture of Miguel and Mama Coco and I just stood in front of that one and I just started bawling in front of all these little kids at Disneyland.
What's wrong with her, Mom? But it's true. And you know what? I stayed, after the credits just, you know, cause, there was a post, that, Lalo Alcaraz said that if you stay till the end, you get to see pictures of the casting crew of their Dead and Loved Ones all the way at the end. But as I read some of the stuff that was, you know, on the credits, it said, if you want to learn more about this tradition, go to your local library. And I thought that was a cute little message in there.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, so that was really cool.
Oh,
and
you know that. I'm going to have to go back just to see all the way to
I didn't stay either.
Tragic. I'm going to have to give them my money. Wow.
But I mean, stories like yours about how the movie resonated with your mom makes me super sad and regretful that this movie didn't come along when my grandmother was alive, because I would love to ask her questions of whether or not she participated in Dia de los Muertos when she lived in Mexico. Mm-hmm. She lived in Mexico until she was, gosh, she was pretty young when she came here. I think maybe she was.
Yeah, my mom was too. She was,
I want to say, well, she was the oldest, so I want to say 12. So still old enough to remember. I mean, she used to tell me that she remembers Carnaval there in Aguascalientes. Mm-hmm. And she would tell me about that as a kid. And so I'm sure she would remember if she participated in this. So I'd like to know the history of, like, is this something big that happens in Aguascalientes? Like, what happens there for Dia de los Muertos? And, like, what do they do? And, like, did my grandmother participate? Or did she sell flowers? Or, like, this is all information that she was the oldest, but she was one of the last to pass away, and there's one sibling left, and it's the youngest of the family, and he's already in his 90s, so and he was born here, so he would have no recollection at all of all the stuff that went on over there. So
yeah,
that makes me sad they're definitely, if you have grandparents or great grandparents, like Sarah, what you were saying, talk to them and ask them questions and write that shit down.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
Once they're gone, that's information and memories that you'll never get back.
It's just lost. And I think that was one of my favorite things about the movie, too, was the aspect of memory of whatchamacallit and there's a scene in the movie where he's trying to get a guitar. Miguel's trying to get a guitar, so they go to an older person.
Oh,
yeah.
The forgotten death.
Yeah.
The final death.
And like, just the fact that, like, he was just like, we call this the final death. He was like, what's after that? We don't know. And it's just like, I was just like, wow, that's some, like, and then even later in the movie, they said, like, this is, we'll meet this fate too again someday when there's nobody to remember us,
right,
even though we have our family. But the point is that even if it's, whatchamacallit, it's supposed to be a long way off. Because you're supposed to, because he was his great great grandfather,
right?
And yet he still managed to hold out that long because his daughter remembered him.
Yeah,
Coco remembered him.
Yeah,
and I just really like that, the fact that no one's really dead until they're forgotten. And this was the same thing that was in the Book of Life too, the aspect of memory. And I just love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
I never saw that one. When it came out, I remember saying, oh, I want to see that, because visually it also looked really beautiful.
It looked really nice.
Yeah, but I never got to see that one.
And one of the cool things is, if you guys are Gael García Bernal and his friend Gael García Bernal and Diego Luna, who are really good friends. Diego Luna does the voice in The Book of Life, and Gael García Bernal does a voice in Coco.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'm like, wow, you know, it's just
they pulled out all the stops.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say something. One of the things I really liked is I took my nephew, and he got cold in the theater, and he was wearing, like, his school uniform, so I let him borrow my scarf that I took purposely to the theater to cry into, because I knew I was going to start sobbing. So he borrowed it, and then at the end of the movie, when he gave it back, he saw, here's your scarf back. I may have cried in it.
So
that was so cute and very honest from him. So it's a very beautiful movie, and if you get a chance, there are some theaters that are still showing it in Spanish, and of course there are some English ones. But I really encourage that you guys take a family member, take your mom, take your dad, kind of share this moment with them.
Can I ask Sarah what the aesthetic was like for you watching it in Spanish as opposed to English?
I loved it more in Spanish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I loved it in English, but it was way cooler in Spanish, because I actually have gone to Mexico to celebrate the Day of the Dead.
Have you?
Yes.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's magnificent. It's very colorful.
Mm-hmm.
In our town of Tlatenango, Puebla, when you have a recently deceased and it's the primera ofrenda for your loved one, there's several tiers that you have to have, like,
right?
In your ofrenda.
Yes.
And also people come into your home and share, you have to make like tamales for like a group of people will come in and out of your first ofrenda. So like you can be there and you can travel around to people's houses and just go in. You're completely welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you a tamal and champurrado or café. It's just very beautiful.
Wow.
We go to the cemetery, and, you know, it's the old cemetery, so it's, like, super awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly like the movie.
Yeah.
And we clean the place, the resting place, we clean it off, we weed it, and then we place flowers. It's just really beautiful. And some people bring tequila, some people bring like a band, and they, or a mariachi, and it's just really, really a celebration of life. And it's just very beautiful. And it was just seeing it on, you know, on the big screen, it was really down to a T, down to like the petals of the marigold. So it was just perfect. I mean, I think this movie could have only been improved by, like, the smell of marigold being pumped in. It would have been awesome. Maybe, like, a little bit of candle, too, a candle smell, but it was just great. And seeing it in Spanish just, you know, reminds me of my mom and my grandparents and stuff like that. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome. You know, just down to, like, all the little ways of speaking in Spanish. It was just super cool.
Yeah,
super cool.
I liked that part. It's kind of a nice transition into our book, but I know we're not at that part yet. But but I liked the part where they'd be talking English, and then, a little Spanish word would come in. And, I would just go with it because I understood it, and people would laugh. But there was definitely in the viewing that I saw it in, you could tell that not everyone understood what was so funny, and that was actually kind of like a cool little, I was like, oh, I'm in on the joke.
Yeah, most definitely.
So I definitely think I want to try to catch it at the Gardena one in Spanish, because I want to see what the difference is. And I definitely got the idea, or hoped anyway, that it would be kind of a lot more powerful as it already was, more powerful in Spanish.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And again, highly recommended to the adults in your life. I actually am thinking maybe I should call my dad and see if we could all go to Gardena. He lives like literally like a 10-minute drive from there, so it'd be cool.
Like my one of my favorite part of the like Spanish words that everyone in the theater who understood it laughed was when the I don't remember what the characters were, but Miguel was already on the other side, and they were telling the Alebrijas had come out, and he's like, "But just watch where you walk; they leave caquitas everywhere." Oh my god, that was funny!
Oh my god, I thought that was. I love the incorporation of Aztec culture into the movie, and Imelda's her spirit guide.
Yeah.
I was just like, power move. Oh my god. Like, you want to talk about like flashbacks, even though I don't need one? Like, Imelda was like, it just reminded me, like seeing her, I was just like, I felt like, I was just like, did these people observe my mother? I'm just like, you want to talk about, the Latina goals. Imelda is Latina goals. It's just like, I wanted to forget you. I was just like,
Like you said, like, I saw Imelda and I thought my great-grandmother Paula.
Yeah.
Like, just like,
we all know that word.
Yes. Yeah.
Super straight and just had that, as they call it here, resting bitch face.
Yeah.
The resting bitch face. She's the type of Latina woman that when you walk in, you're like, oh, shit. ma'am, please tell me what you do so I can get out of your way. She's the one that you don't fuck with.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That was me, Abuelita Paula, and Imelda, like, represented her, like, to the T.
To the T. I was just like, when I saw it, I was just like, shit, like, goddamn. Like, it's like, they're like, you know Latino made this movie. He did it. Everything about from the way she dressed, to the way she talked,
to the way she stood.
To the way she stood. Her
to that face she gave you. Even though she was a skull, you knew.
Like, oh, my god. And, like, from her spirit guide and everything, I was just so like, goddamn, if this ain't a love letter to a Latina woman, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm. No, totally agree. Absolutely. That's exactly who I saw. It was great. So we here at Comadres Comics just love this movie and can't get enough of it. So we highly recommend it.
Yeah, and there is obviously, besides the artwork and all the creators that worked on it, first syndicated Latino cartoonist Lalo Alcaraz had a lot to do with the authenticity of this movie. He worked as behind the scenes as a
consultant.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and when I saw him in person, I hadn't seen the movie yet, but when I saw him in person at the Latino Comics Expo, I thanked him for all the hard work that he had done on the movie, because I had been seeing all the things that he was sharing. And at that time, one of the cool things about the movie is that Disney released it a full month ahead of time in Mexico, before they did here. So there were already reviews and things coming in from Mexico of the actual people whose movie, you know, who the movie was about. Such overwhelming positive feedback.
It is the second highest grossing film in Mexican history.
Wow.
And it's the first movie to have been released in Mexico before being released in the United States.
I thought that was such a awesome, respectful move for Disney to make.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you knew, but not long ago... Well, they had to do something, because some time ago they tried to get the rights to The Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. So, which is, I think, what was the whole thing that precipitated Lalo becoming involved, is that he gave them shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very vocal about it.
He doesn't pull any punches.
Yeah, no, he doesn't.
He gives it to you straight.
Yes. And so they were like, okay, and I think they actually approached him and said, you know, you have a lot to say. We want to turn that into something positive for this movie. And, I mean, you can just tell, once you see it, just how, to the very minute details of the food that is sitting on the table. Mm-hmm. It's a plate of pan dulce.
Yeah. And then the drumstick that the dog got was from a plate of mole.
Yes.
I was like, it's so, like, everything
and,
was perfect.
And oh my gosh.
From the dog himself, that he's a specific kind of breed
of dog. A Mexican dog.
Yeah, Mexican dog.
And the apron that Miguel's grandmother wears, that my grandmother wore one of those exact aprons every single freaking day of her life that I've seen her.
I have one of those.
Yeah.
I just ran into mine in the closet. Yeah. Well, it's not mine. It was my mother's. But yes, exactly.
Yes.
Like that kind of like pattern, black with white that makes it also look a little bit gray. Mm-hmm. I have it.
With a little ruffle in the pocket. My grandmother had, she always had safety pins and clothespins and tissue. And a mint in her little pocket.
Oh man, those are great memories. Very great memories, definitely.
Well, I'm sure we could talk about Coco all freaking night. So yes. We should probably stop ourselves now and move on to our next.
Jen, what's your chisme de la semana?
My chisme de la semana is actually twofold. And it might actually be kind of a bit old news, except for the second half of it. But for those of you who are familiar with it, She-Ra is back.
Oh,
and she's
going to
be coming back on Netflix. And it's part of like since DreamWorks has a deal with Netflix going on with the whole Trollhunters thing and everything, they had just announced like basically a new series of cartoons that they're going to be doing exclusively with Netflix, and one of them was She-Ra. She-Ra only ever had two seasons, two glorious corny seasons that I love with all my heart.
That's right,
and I still rewatch to this day, because my little sister used to watch it on Kubo, and I would, when I was babysitting her, I would watch it with her, and I was just like, oh my god, I love She-Ra. And I was just like, in my baby gay mind, when I didn't know, I was just like, I very much enjoyed her skirt.
Oh, yeah. I have She-Ra PJs.
Years later, I ran into the She-Ra horse. What was the horse's name?
Swiftwind.
Swiftwind.
Yeah.
And She-Ra at a yard sale, and ooh, I bought them. So I'm like, yes,
nice.
I came up on that.
That's nice.
But,
actually,
tying this, She-Ra is going to be helmed by Noelle Stevenson.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And for those of you who are not familiar, Noelle Stevenson is the creator of Nimona and Lumberjanes, which are super
amazing,
popular kids' books.
Comic books. Mm-hmm. Nimona was a webcomic and garnered so much attention and such great following that it got picked up in published into a graphic novel, and the Nimona is amazing. I read it, and it's an all-ages book, and I did not expect to be affected by it the way that I was, but at the end of that book, I was sobbing.
Wow.
At the end of, oh my gosh, I was so emotionally invested in those characters by the end of that story, and it's just so amazing, and it's a female, a young female protagonist, and it's the story, just the way that her relationship develops with some of the other characters, and just the whole storyline together is amazing. And from there, Lumberjanes developed, and Lumberjanes also female-driven storyline about a group of girls who all meet up at summer camp and go to the same summer camp every summer, and it is, I can't remember what the Miss something, Miss, it's a long name, but it's...
It's Miss Petty something.
Something something yeah. camp for hardcore lady types.
Yeah.
That's the name of the camp. So, but the cool thing about the camp is it's not just any regular summer camp. There's all kinds of weird, supernatural, unexplained phenomenon that happens at this camp. And... what I really love about Lumberjanes, besides the storyline and just all the character development, there is a transgender character that you don't really... I don't know that it's ever actually really been said, but mm-hmm. it's really highly, heavily inferred mm-hmm. that she's transgender. And there's, like, like developing feelings between some of the girls that they're trying to like
parse out
like their sexuality and uh-huh. stuff like that. But it's just so it's done so well, and the writer really weaves in math and science and history, and also mentions really cool, awesome female historical characters and some of the cool things that they've done in history, and weaves it into the story. I cannot recommend Lumberjanes enough. And if you have little boys or girls who are interested in reading comics, I highly recommend.
Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to drop sometime this year, probably around the summer. Noelle has been working on this for a while.
Wow.
So that's, in her Twitter, she basically revealed that that she's been working in it for secret for a couple months now.
Okay.
So there are some episodes already already finished. So they're just basically finishing it up, and then they're gonna drop it. And oh my god, I'm gonna give Netflix all my money. Like, I love She-Ra so much. I was unfulfilled. Those two seasons were unfulfilling. I wanted more.
So wait, did She-Ra actually just have a solo title animation?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know about that.
It came way after He-Man.
He-Man, okay. Yeah. I just knew her from He-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she did, like, her first appearance was in, what was it called? The Secret of the Sword, was an animated movie, where she was introduced as a villain.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta see that now. Oh, I don't remember seeing that at all.
Not a villain, but as an antagonist to He-Man.
Okay.
And whatchamacallit. And then Utsum found out that she was his secret sister, and she became part of the He-Man mythos. And so she appeared in a few episodes of He-Man, but then she got her own solo series that was super corny, and I absolutely
love it. Super corny. Wait, and are those on Netflix?
Corny and campy.
Are they on Netflix?
I think they might be now.
Now,
they should be.
I'm sure that makes sense that they would release them now that they are hyping up the new one. I'm going to look right now while you talk.
And honestly, I rewatched the old episodes on YouTube. I don't know if they're still up.
Oh,
but
okay, yeah.
There was, I think in total, there was only maybe like 30 or 50 episodes done in total.
That's a lot. I mean, I guess for little tiny half-hour episodes, it goes by quickly, but it seems like a lot.
And you're just like, oh, God, I love
the Archer. Too. He was just so feminine. I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it.
He was pastel, and he was...
A lot of pastel colors.
Yes, it was just great. A lot of glittering... A lot of cool stuff
and
like that.
This is gonna reveal my truly emo past. But not only did I really like She-Ra, I really liked the Hordak's other like the. She dressed in red and she did black magic. You never saw her face, but
I remember that.
I really, really liked her. And because she was
so mysterious.
She was so mysterious. She had the whole goth look down, and I was just like, God damn.
So, yeah, it was kind of a nod to Evil Lyn, only more mysterious.
Yeah,
I was a big fan of...
There was an episode where we do figure it out.
She-Ra, Princess of Power is on Netflix.
Yes! They only have one season, though.
Let me see.
Unless it's all the episodes, and you just...
I hope so.
One season.
Well, it only says one season, but they're in that one season, 65 episodes.
Okay, let me see the name of... I know the greatest...
Everyone's a saint to Jen. Read the descriptions of the episodes. I've never watched it. I didn't even know it existed. So I will have to, just in support of Noelle Stevenson alone, I feel like I need to watch all of these old episodes to prepare myself.
Absolutely. Are you
kidding? There's 93 episodes.
Oh, season
2
okay.
was only 38. I remember this. I remember being, because when I would watch season 2, it was cut halfway through, not even halfway, a third, because it was supposed to be as long as the first season.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so, but they were only able to, like, turn out 30 episodes.
And when was this, when did it come out?
1985.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it may not transition well in the passing of time, but it's something that defined a lot of childhoods. And
of course,
and
yeah.
And it defined mine. And, I mean, I was a fan of He-Man, and then I tried to see it again, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
Oracle just... Ugh. Oracle. Oh my god. It's sort of like
Oracle.
It's sort of like me trying to watch the Power Rangers again and freaking yay. No. Oh my fucking god. Seriously. So annoying. you guys remember what's his name? God, I don't even know what his name is, but yeah, that was just all over all the time.
What was his name? It was L. It was something with an A. God, I
from Power
Alpha.
Rangers?
From Power Rangers. Alpha. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For
somebody who hates it, I know too much of it.
I would sell my soul to Power Rangers. Like, it's defined. You want to talk about defining power moments? I love Power Rangers. It's great.
When that I was already too old when all that stuff came out. My brother was into it.
And me too. My brother was into it, and that's how I kind of got into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. Particular.
I'm well, that is
about
some good
yeah.
chisme. Noelle Stevenson being involved in it. I don't care what it would be. I would be all about it and support it in any way I could. So, everybody out there listening, make sure that you check out She-Ra on Netflix. So we should get a Netflix sponsorship for that shout out.
I'm loving the Netflix right now.
So yeah. Oh my gosh. I just finally finished Punisher.
Oh
my gosh. It was so freaking good. Mm-hmm. If you haven't watched Punisher, watch Punisher.
A lot of people
Punisher.
At the store.
Yes. People are coming in and this is the first time, I'm not even gonna lie. Out of all the big Disney Marvel releases on the big screen, I could count on one hand the people who came in and said, I saw the movie and I want to come read the books. But this Punisher TV show on Netflix has really sparked an interest in the Punisher character in the comic books. And we get I've gotten a lot of people coming in and buying a lot of Garth Ennis Punisher. Mm-hmm. Any Max series mm-hmm. stuff that we have.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I remember those covers. They were freaking amazing. And he was kind of like, his back was towards you with this kind of like shadow over his face. Oh,
yeah.
Such great covers. Those
like,
were awesome.
Like the defining Punisher. I was going to say Garth Ennis, and then but then I was like, Punisher, Gunisher.
And I'm telling you, that's his name, Jonathan Barenthal? John Barenthal? Is that his name? Barenthal's his last name.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what his first name is. Is it John?
Yeah.
He better win. What's the TV awards? Are they Emmys? Grammys?
That's the Golden Globe.
Well, that's for. Golden Globe is for. Isn't that the European market or whatever are the Golden Globes?
No, they have a European market, but there's American stuff, American TV shows. A lot of HBO,
No, I know, but it's their people. I know there's a difference, but what do TV shows win? Are they're Emmys?
I think it's Emmys,
I think
yeah.
it's the Emmys.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. No, that's music. Emmys.
No,
Grammys.
Okay. Can you tell that I love award shows?
I used to watch them a lot when I was in middle school. Now I don't. I'm just like...
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, whatever. I mean, I'll listen to your music.
Me too. I used to watch it a lot when I was a kid. All the shows. I was about the Grammys, the Oscars, the People's Choice. Oh, my gosh. When I first moved to Los Angeles, I went to People's Choice Awards like 5 years in a row. yeah, so there's Primetime Emmy Awards, and I guess that's where he would come out, because this is talking about Handmaid's Tale, where the Emmys won some Emmys this last time. But if he does not win some sort of award, I will know the fix is in, because his freaking acting was amazing. Oh my God.
My all-time favorite parts in the show was when he would lower his voice a little bit and go into like a little story. I love those stories he told about his missions or things like that.
Yeah.
Or those really made him, I think it solidified the backstory that they needed for him to come out.
Yeah.
His emotion and where he was coming from. And I think those little backstories, those little stories that he narrated, you know, while he was talking to someone, and his facial expressions while he was telling these stories was, I loved it.
Yeah.
It was like something I hadn't seen before.
Yeah. It really, like, I physically had reactions to watching him act out these scenes, and he was just so, like, it was so, like, heartfelt. And we had just read Punisher Born, which was also, it's also a Max series book, it's Garth Ennis, and it's kind of, it's a story, we talked about whether or not it was canon, and I think that we said that
I believe it's in canon for Garth Ennis's run, not anything else.
Yeah.
Because I believe in Garth Ennis's run, and spoiler alert, even though the series has been over for like 10 years, I believe in Garth Ennis's run, Punisher dies.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's either he dies or it's heavily implied that he is dead.
Okay.
That he's dead.
Honestly, he's merely a human. The fact that he survives half of the shit that he goes through in comic books, I'm amazed at.
Yeah.
But, the Punisher Born was a story told about him when he was in Vietnam War. And, kind of shows who he is character-wise.
Before
his wife and children, his family is dead. Mm-hmm. And you see in this story that is written how he is the Punisher already. Like, that's just who he is. And that he uses the death of his family as an excuse to just barely go all out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he's kind of been contained. He's being unleashed. And this was a phrase that I liked that was in the book, Punisher Born, was that one of his men, he says, like, I will go home. I will not fall in love with war Captain Frank has.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, and I think that perfectly encapsulates who Frank Castle is.
Yeah.
Before and everything, and afterwards as well.
So I had not watched the TV show yet before. I had started watching it, but I hadn't finished before I read the book. And it actually, even though it was before all of this, I kept thinking about that book as I was watching the rest of the TV show, because of the fact that the TV show deals so heavily with what was going on in his one of his tours. And of course, this isn't the Vietnam War anymore, because so much time has passed, and it was supposed to be present day 2017. But the fact that I have to give so much credit and kudos to whoever it was that they had in the background, helping them to write all the scenes that dealt with post-traumatic stress disorder with soldiers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just so, like,
I like
emotionally, trying to watch it. I can't imagine actually being the person who's going through all of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like how they got really political with, like, you know, I guess domestic terrorism and stuff like that. So I thought that was really current and really drove in the point home. So yeah. I really liked that. I didn't think they were going to go that route, but they did, and they beautifully handled it as part of the storyline. So yeah. That was I love the show too.
So I don't know how we got on this tangent, but it is comic book related. Oh, Netflix.
Yeah. Oh, the whole I was supposed to be doing Cheese Man.
Yeah. So that's two Netflix shout outs. Netflix people, Komalusi Comics at gmail.com. You can write us there.
PayPal.
Yeah, for any promotional support, please contact us.
And the other next bit of news is that Marvel is reviving their Exiles comic. So, Exiles, I know, was like a 90s comic that went on all the way to about 2009.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it is being written by Saladin Ahmed, who is the person who is writing Black Bolt right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's also a YA novelist. And this new Exiles team will have Blink. And it's also going to have, they've released some of the follow-up, another person has been...
We'll have who, Blink?
Blink, yeah.
Okay.
And, she was the titular character of the previous Exiles, she's been, like, the hit character.
Wait, when's the last time Exiles was out?
2009.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, the current lineup has Iron Lad, who is basically, and it was this, who, he came out in the first... run of Young Avengers, and it was later revealed that when he grows up, he will be Kang the Conqueror. It's gonna have a alternate reality version of a grown up Kamala Khan. Yes.
Oh my god.
So who has faced some shit?
Oh my god.
Yes. So there's gonna be a grown up hardcore.
This comes out in April.
April. Yes. Comes out in April, and there is going to be. Baby Wolverine.
I know. I saw that. Baby Wolverine. Oh my gosh. I saw that the other day online, and I showed it to Eddie. I'm like, what's this all about? He's like, I don't know, because I guess it hasn't come out in solicitation and previews yet.
Mm-hmm.
And which makes sense if it comes out in April, so it'll be out next month, February, March, April. Or no, maybe at the end of this month. But anyway, he hadn't seen it yet, and I'm like, I need to know more about Baby Wolverine.
Yeah.
Nice.
And there is one more character that is as of yet to be, like, released and, like, really shown who it is, so we don't know. There's one other character that we don't know
who it is. So out of all of that you just shared, they're actually saving something because that's their big coup de grace thing that they are saving? I can't imagine what it is that's better than all of that.
Like, they've already got me sold. I haven't seen Iron Lad since the Young Avengers, so, like, I'm good. Like, you already got me, like, hooked. I'm down for it. But, in a statement, Ahmed said that, Exiles will be a two-fisted, big-hearted, wild ride of a book about a diverse team of alternate universe Marvel heroes banding together to stop a dire threat to the multiverse. Sort of a what-if meets classic X-Men.
Ooh. I'm all about double-fisting, I'm telling you.
Oh my god. Okay. And so the original Exiles ran for about 100 issues before being relaunched as New Exiles, and then the second Exiles series was introduced that ended in 2009, and the concept was briefly revived again as Extreme X-Men. In 2012.
Uh-huh.
So it's been a cool minute since they've done an Exiles book. So I'm excited. I'm a adult, a hardcore Kamala Khan. I'm sold already. Like, I'm really excited for this book. I don't know who the fifth person in this lineup is going to be, but I hope it's going to be somebody cool.
I feel like it has to be after all of that news. If they think that that's something that tops all of that, then... Mm-hmm. I'm like, who is it? What could it be?
Yeah. And it comes out April 2018, so this coming spring.
Sweet.
And then after this, Marvel, please reintroduce the Extreme X-Men series where
I know where this is going.
Where Hercules and Wolverine are lovers.
Yeah. Ooh, how exciting.
Yeah.
Nice.
What do I have today? You know what? I didn't look up any information about this beer. It was a last-minute addition. So we are going to have to wing it on the info on this on this beer. But I'm already excited about this high-class beer that is corked. It's not a can. It's not a bottle cap. It is a cork, and it actually makes me nervous to open these things. So
don't take an eye out.
I know. I'm gonna point it away here as I unscrew the little.
You know what you could do? You could put once you take off the metal, put a napkin over the cork, and then that way it contains the cork when you.
Okay.
So.
Okay, so I'm actually going to, this is a barrel-aged Old Rasputin Russian Imperial Stout. This was a Christmas gift to me.
Ooh.
From a friend.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to give a shout out to Michael Hughes, who knows that I love craft beer, and he gave me this and also the Pliny the Elder, but I figured that Pliny the Elder was not a beer that we necessarily wanted to taste on here because it's a really weak, like, Pilsner type style. Is it Pilsner or a lager? I'm not sure, but it's very, very light and easy drinking beer. And I know that this definitely, this Old Rasputin will garner a lot more interesting reactions from us. Oh my gosh, is that Jessica?
Yes, it is.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Well, the bottle looks very sexy, so I can't wait.
It's a very nice bottle.
I can't wait.
So, it says here it is stout aged in bourbon barrels. Like I said, North Coast Brewing Company. It's a California, North Coast Brewing Company is a California brewing company. They are located north coast of California in Fort Bragg.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's pretty cool. I had heard of North Coast before, but, or I heard of Old Rasputin before, actually, but didn't connect it to North Coast, so. So this here on the actual North Coast Brewing Company website, they talk about, I want to kind of get to the page that we can share it, but my phone is getting a little bit slow. I'll try to open it at the same time as I'm trying to talk. It says that it is produced in the tradition of 18th century English brewers who supplied the court of... Oh,
whoa,
there we
whoa.
Go! Who supplied the court of Russia's... it keeps loading on me and reloading, so I can't finish my sentence. Okay. North Coast... Here, you can start...
Let's
there we
let
go.
Breathe.
Okay. They supplied the court of Russia's Catherine the Great. Mm. Old Rasputin seems to develop a cult following wherever it goes. So, I guess once we drink it, that's it. We're goners. We're going to join the cult. It's rich, intense brew with big, complex flavors and a warming finish. Let's see what else. Says... well, it's a Russian Imperial Stout, so we already said that, and that's about all that it says as far as the little backstory. But it's very dark, very, very dark stout. It has an ABV of 9%, so it is not for the faint at heart. And it's 75 IBUs in bitterness, so we'll see how that translates here once we start drinking it. So it's highly recommended in this on their website. It has a overall score of 100 points.
Wow, that's great.
So
Jen, your cup.
You know to give me the one with less.
We will let you know what we think. So here is to Old Rasputin. So let's see.
Oh, my God. I could totally tell it's barrel age, so that's very exciting. I actually took the cup with most of the head because I tried to pour it without much head.
Yeah.
That's and it's a very thick head.
It's good.
Is it?
It's look, it's really good. Give me more of it.
You know that out of all of us, Jen is the most skeptical of dark beers because she's the newest beer drinker from all of us. And she was definitely, when I told her it was a stout, she's like, okay, I'll try it.
Well, I gotta say, it has those really nice nutty oak flavors from the barrel age that we love. I'm a big fan.
Barrel age beers.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that as well. There's a toasty finish in the aftertaste.
You know what I like about it? A lot of stout drinkers really, really like the coffee flavor. Mm-hmm. Of stouts. I'm not a coffee drinker, so that actually is what turns me off to stouts. This doesn't have an overwhelming, it's a very flavorful flavor, but it's not an overwhelming coffee flavor to me, and so I actually really like it a lot.
That's actually why I like it, is that it tastes, when I drank it, it tasted like coffee. And I was just like, oh my God, this is really good. But as I said, it has like a very nice, like nutty, full flavor. Yeah. And it's really, really good.
I feel there's some chocolate in here.
Definitely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's delicious.
Yeah.
I think as a treat, I would definitely buy this bottle and just drink it all by myself. Next Netflix and chill for
9% all by yourself.
Oh, heck
I'm all for it.
Nice. Yes. This is kind of like I think this is sort of like my equivalent to, like, you know how some women, they like to go buy
a bottle of champagne.
Or you know, ice cream. You know, like,
You were going a completely different direction.
Like ice cream or chocolate or whatever, you know, like that's their kind of like their guilty pleasure.
Oh my God, this would be amazing over a scoop of vanilla ice cream.
Yes, that's what I was getting at. Sort of kind of the same. I think it makes the synopsis in my head pop the way that chocolate or ice cream would do. Like it has that kind of guilty pleasure feel, like this is something that I can, kids, if you're listening, close your ears right now, but this would be something that I could, like,
what is she gonna say?
I'm gonna light some candles, put on some porn, and just have a good time by myself with one of these beers.
You go through all the trouble of lighting candles first before that?
Sometimes when I'm feeling like romantic. Because I want the smell of the smoky or the, you know, the scented candles, you know,
really good.
The light, the flickering light. I'm a big fan of lighting.
You put in a lot more effort than I would.
Yes.
Most of the time, I just roll over, you know? But sometimes, like, if I have a beer like this, I'm going to make the effort to find the perfect money shot that I need. You know? I'm going to go, and then before opening my bottle and, you know, going down. It's like a night out for myself. It's like a me time.
Oh, my God.
That's funny. Already, we just have little taster shot glasses.
Yeah, you know, when you said you had a stout,
I feel it.
Yes, yeah. I feel it already. I've only drank about half of my little shot glass size taster, and I already feel warm, and
the juices are flowing.
Yes,
you know,
just,
very languid.
Oh, languid. That's a perfect word to describe this. Yes,
English major.
It's excellent. I want to take my time with it. That's how beautiful it is. It's like I want to make sweet love to it. Like it's not Sticky Monkey, but it's right up there with it.
It's
up there with
but
it.
But it even kind of has a similar
taste. It does. Mm-hmm. But Sticky Monkey is a sipping beer. Mm. Like from a Sticky Monkey, I take little sips of it and I enjoy it, but I can actually drink this like a beer. And yes, there is very similar notes and tastes to Sticky Monkey, but this is a drink. I know it sounds bad that this is a drinkable Sticky Monkey. Because I definitely would rate Sticky Monkey still on top of this, but it's different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a different.
This is definitely, like I was saying, this is something that I would, like, take out on a date and buy dinner for. You know, Sticky Monkey is the one that I'm going to bang in the backseat of the car. You know? It's like, that's the difference for me.
I would have thought it would have been the reverse, but
okay. Me too.
You know what?
Me too.
Because, I thought of that compared to other beers, but then this one is sort of like a dark horse in the running that just came by and said, hey.
And I'm like, I didn't know what to expect from this.
Yeah.
So if you want to get laid quick, the Sticky Monkey is
well, one. Also, Sticky Monkey's what, like 12 ABV or something?
Yes, it is.
It's very, very, very,
You want that to hit quick?
Mm-hmm, Hit it.
And that one is, for $20, it's like a small bottle compared to this one.
Mm-hmm,
this bottle is, let me see, it's 16 fluid ounces. It's one pint 0.9 fluid ounces.
Mm-hmm.
So 16.9 fluid ounces. The bottle looks bigger than I guess what it really is. It's just a pint.
Mm-hmm.
But the Sticky Monkey bottle is way smaller.
Oh, it is, definitely.
Yeah, I want to say it's like 9 ounces or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, and for $20, and I'm not sure how much this costs.
It's a truly
again,
treat yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, because this was a gift, I don't know how much it costs, but I have to believe, since it was a Christmas gift, I don't think Hughes would be spending $20 per bottle, plus he bought another bottle for me, and a block of cheese, so that's already too much.
Wow. That's,
so this definitely is...
Hughes doesn't get the drag from me.
This definitely is, I would say, a great bargain to spend and enjoy, whether or not is an evening with yourself at night or with friends, as we are doing right now.
It's delicious.
So... based on our, for those of you who, since we've been gone away for so long, may have forgotten, our beer rating system is a penis, and it is the bottom. And I just want to say, in defense of myself, that I did not come up with this. This penis was in existence here way before I got here. there's other in the studios. There are other podcasts that use the facilities here, and this is their rating system that we have just adopted because it's so cute. The very bottom of the rating system is obviously flaccid. Flaccid is with two C's?
I don't think so. Is it?
Is it?
I believe it is. Let me look it up. It looks correct to me.
Okay.
I just wrote it like the dictionary pronunciation.
Yeah. I have never had to write it out, thank God. But it just looks wrong. But anyway.
Yeah, two C's.
Okay, flaccid. The it starts at flaccid, so obviously flaccid is a beer that we just do not like at all. I would rate Miller Lite, Bud Light, any other Anheuser-Busch beer, a flaccid. And then we go up to initial, which would be just a little bit step over flaccid, and then partial, where you're starting to get the party started, but you still got a long way to go. And then from there, full, where, I mean, you can do some damage with a full. And then at the top is rigid. I mean, rigid is, I mean, you...
You're excited.
There's not a lot more that you can ask for, but if you want to be greedy and you do want to ask for more, at the very, very, very tip top of our beer rating system is Super Saiyan, which I did not know what that meant until I started here rating beers in the studios. But I would definitely, I mean, Sticky Monkey was Super Saiyan. Mm-hmm. I would definitely rate this rigid. At the top of the line for sure, but under Super Saiyan, Sticky Monkey, and also my absolute favorite as well, which is the Allagash Curio barrel aged beer, which is my favorite. Those two are Super Saiyans, but this for me is rigid. So I would drink this all day. And I have to say, not until I started rating beers here with Comadres y Comics did I start really appreciating porters and stouts.
Nice.
So I will always thank you guys for that. And so will my beer distributor at Torrance, the Torrance Beer Cellar. Definitely check them out if you're there in the area. They have awesome, awesome, awesome beers all the time and free tastings on Friday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Again, Torrance Beer Cellar, sponsorships available.
I'm with Kristen on this. This is definitely a rigid. It's just missing that little bit of oomph that really made it for Sticky Monkey.
Mm-hmm.
I am still developing my beer taste, so right now Sticky Monkey is the only Super Saiyan beer for me.
Yeah.
But this one is definitely up there. This one is definitely rigid, and it's really good, and I really, really like it.
I've drank about 3 ounces of it, and I'm warm and fuzzy, and like I feel so nice and relaxed.
Same. I have this like warmth in my gut right now that feels really good.
And it's good. It's good. It tastes so good.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Sarah, and I'm going to rate it Super Saiyan only because it's making me feel like I want to just open myself up like a flower. I don't know what it is. It's you know what? I think when my husband comes home on the weekend of January 20th, I think I'm gonna have one of these and we're gonna have a good night. I think so. No, this it has gotten the juices flowing. I feel all kinds of ways.
I know. Every time she says
that. Like, I don't know. Like,
let me shoot this back like a shot.
It's like your body's a wonderland. And I want to take a tour. I don't know. It's great. I love it. I really... Thank you, Kristen. This is amazing.
Well, thank you, Michael Hughes. I hope you never listen to this podcast. Because he actually is an employee at Heidi Hill Comics, and that one would be a little inappropriate. But he will definitely get a big, he's already gotten a thank you from me, but we'll definitely get a bigger thank you from both of you. I'll let him know that the beer was super appreciated.
I'll tell him thanks.
Yeah. Oh my God. Freaking amazing. I love it. I really do. It's kind of like it's one of those like Super Saiyan that starts off really like ha me, and then it goes into Super Saiyan mode. Ha, you know, it's perfect. It's perfect. So yes, that was our rating. Two fools and a rigid. Two rigids and a Super Saiyan. And now I guess we can go into.
I know. Book review. For those of you listening, yes, we are still doing a book review. We've already talked like for 100 hours and we haven't got to our book review. So, but it is a great one this time around, and this is one of the creators that we met at the Latino Comics Expo. So hopefully we'll be able to get to a lot of the books that we've picked up along the way there at the expo, and share with you the stories of the people that we met and the books that we picked up. And we've already, last episode, did Santa Sucia, and I know Jen and I and Sarah picked up multiple, so hopefully we have a lot more in the future to share. But today's books, it's actually two books. And the first one is Low Riders in Space. That's volume one, and it is by Kathy Camper and Raul the Third, who is actually Raul Gonzalez. So Kathy was there. She was the one at the Latino Comics Expo, and Raul was not able to attend because they're both, I think, from, I don't know where Raul's from, but she's from up north.
Yeah, she's from, I believe, like Oregon.
I think she was, was it Portland or Seattle?
I think Portland.
Okay.
I want to say Portland.
Yeah.
Raul is from Boston.
Okay, so yeah, so more East Coast. So yeah, it was maybe difficult for him to get out to the West Coast. But so Jen was sold as soon as we were walking around the floor together, and as soon as she saw it, she was like, "Oh my God, I want to read this book!" So she stopped to talk to Kathy. If you want to, talk a little bit about the conversation you had with Kathy.
So Kathy herself, I believe she is she's of Arab descent, and she met with Raul basically online. She had this idea and she wanted an artist because she herself was just a writer. She wasn't an artist. And she saw his work and they decided to get in contact and really like get this book going. And just what she told me, she says the book itself is focused on lowriders. That's what, lowriders in space, and just like car culture and everything about that, and how she herself has always really liked it and really fell in love with it. And
and it's so funny because when you see Kathy herself, like, you would never imagine that this woman, just looking at her, that she would be totally into car culture or lowrider culture for sure.
She's a librarian.
She's a librarian, and she looks like a librarian.
Aww, how cute.
Yeah, and so she was really awesome. She was really cool. She was very, very excited to talk about her book. And
She was.
And I really enjoyed my conversations with her and how she went about creating the book and her communications with Raul and everything. But I immediately fell in love with it when I saw the book because, one, South Central LA, born and raised.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I love lowriders.
Yeah.
I used to be super, super into them. Me and my brother both. We would buy the magazines. We would watch.
Really?
We would buy the magazines.
See,
we would watch.
I would.
Hit My Ride.
See, I would never think that about you.
Me either.
That's so cool, though.
I have with the naked ladies. Well, not naked, but I had to do it on the down low.
Yeah.
Honestly, and why are you that surprised? I'm happy. Like, even before then, even.
Oh yeah, here's Jen. I'm so into the car culture.
all the books with the naked ladies on
it. But I was. I really did. I love learning about lowriders, about like how to like outfit a car and everything, and just the, everything that went into cars, and I haven't been to a car show in a really long time, but I kind of miss it. And reading that book kind of like it was a bit of a hit of nostalgia because I was reading magazines. We would have to share the magazine with my brother, and one, he would have to be the one to go and buy it because I couldn't do it. And we had to hide it from our mom.
Uh-huh.
Because she was just like, they were like devil books or whatever. And she was just like, why do you want a car? They're like, why do you like those cars? They're dumb. They're ridiculous. They're only for cholos. And we're like, but they're cool. And car detailing and everything. And so I was immediately sold on the concept. And I believe I said this once when when we first read Maggie the Mechanic, mm-hmm. and I'm reading about it, and I said that it's like reading a friend. That's what this book felt like to me, because it just, everything about how the main character's loves for cars, mm-hmm. and the dedication that they really want, is they want to make their own car, outfit it, and just how everything was done, the artwork, the way where they're living and everything, it was like I was 12 again and running with my brother trying to hail down the lowriders and be like, we're shouting, your car is cool.
That's so cute.
This is what we used to do, because uh-huh. Where we used to live, a lot of lowriders would pass by on their way, because we lived about two blocks from where they would do impromptu car shows, mm-hmm. of like guys with their lowriders, yeah. and this was like the guys who looked to like cholas and everything, but man, we really liked their cars. And we were like 10, 11, 12, and we were just like, you just see these kids running around and they're just like shouting, your lowriders are cool.
That's
and they
so
would
indulge cute.
Us. They would make their cars like jump and everything, and we would just be like super excited. And it wasn't just me and my brother, it was us and our cousins as well,
yeah,
and a bunch of neighborhood kids. We would all like run out and try to see the lowriders passing by, and it was just like, it was,
this is such a cute story.
it was a blast from the past.
And I have to say that as I was reading the first volume, Lowriders in Space, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know about your lowrider thing as a kid, but space is definitely your thing.
Space is
and so
my
I was
thing.
Like, oh my gosh, Jen, I can see why she loves this book.
So yeah, it was just not only just about the lowriders, but everything about it, the extent, like, and you can tell this book was written by a librarian, by somebody with like a background in literature and everything, because from the way how they outfit the car and the descriptions and everything, how they take the Pleiades, the exaggeration, and everything about it, I just love this book. It's like, as I'm talking about it, like, I just, all these details are coming back to me right now, of everything that I really liked, from the description of the cars, how they stole a few rings from Saturn to stripe the car, how they stole Orion's belt to put on the hood, on the top of the car, and how they lost their steering wheel, so they took the Pleiades, the mm-hmm. seven sisters, and used that as their steering wheel. I loved everything about that, and it's just, this book is so amazing.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and if I couldn't tell you on the fact that it was like reading my childhood and everything that I wanted, that I wanted it, it's just, it is a great, I think it is a good literary book.
It really is, and this is Kristen. Mm-hmm. I feel like, specifically, the fact that Kathy is not Latino, but the artist is, you might be like, whatever, it's just a story, and it's I'm still going to support it, but it's the artist is Latino. But there's so much of Latino culture in this book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
She gets it.
She, as the writer, and maybe as the writer and the artist collaborated, I don't know what their process is, but there is so many, there's lots of quote-unquote Spanglish mm-hmm. in the book. You're reading a sentence, and all of a sudden there's a Spanish word that's thrown in there, and on top of it, all the Spanish words have the definitions of them at the bottom of that page. Mm-hmm. So this is a book that is considered juvenile fiction. It's all ages appropriate, I think. There's definitely a book that you can read to a younger child who doesn't know how to read yet, or just let a child read on their own. But it's just, especially, I think, the fact that there's so much Latino culture enmeshed, not only in the fact that these are low riders and that those are, you know, that is part of a lot of Latino Chicano culture, but just a lot of the things that the main characters talk about and things that they reference and
how they dress.
It's just so, and then the next book is Low Riders to the Center of the Earth. And of course, no Latinx book is complete tweet without a reference to to Lucha Libre.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole story revolving around that in the second story, in the second book.
Not only that, I love the dedication into to the culture, to the Aztec gods and the research. You can tell that she researches a lot of that stuff because some of it even I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like,
it's very educational.
Very educational, super well done, and it's just and the designs. I absolutely love the designs in this book.
I felt it was a throwback to kind of like a Felix the Cat kind of feel on the characters.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. The animation, I love the fact that they actually use a medium in their artwork for the pages. They use colored pencils as opposed to inks. No?
Colored pens. They're all ballpoint pens.
Everything about
my mind has been blown.
Because
I don't know if you noticed some of the shading, the crisscrossing.
Yes.
And I'm just like, that takes so much time.
He talks about it in the back of one of the books. I'm not sure which one. But he talks about it to being a throwback to a lot of the artwork that he used to see in the back of those lowrider magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And so he consciously made that decision to do these books in that kind of medium of using the ballpoint. So it's all blue, black, and red ballpoint pen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I can see that. It looks freaking amazing.
And yes.
In the second book, they throw in the more colors, some green, some yellow, but it's all still done in pen.
Mm-hmm.
And Lowriders to the Center of the Earth, they actually want the Pura Pelbre Award for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is like a small, like, independent, like, award that's done, but it was done for the artwork, and it was, the winner of the Pura Pelbre Award for illustration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you think ballpoint pen, and then you see the actual art, and it blows your freaking mind.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's so many layers to it. It's, like, if you really look at it, there's so many layers and so much depth within the drawings. As not only in the items that are being drawn, but the layers of shading and stuff, mm-hmm. it's really breathtaking.
Yeah.
And maybe you're not a fan of kind of like an old-style kind of cartoon, Felix the Cat kind of per se, but this stuff totally blows your mind. As soon as you open the book, you're just like, whoa.
Yeah. It's just... when I just flipped through it before I started reading it, I was like, oh, you know, whatever. But the story, in addition to the art, was just, like, so freaking amazing. Like, I was telling Jen that I kind of put off reading the books because it was the holidays, and I was just like, ugh, there's two books this time, and I was just, like, felt so overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. But I was not even halfway through the first book that I was like, oh my god, this is so amazing. And mm-hmm. And it's a quick read because it is juvenile fiction. And mm-hmm. so it is, I think the setup and the layout of the books mm-hmm. are very easily digestible, for that, to be able to be easily read for a younger age group.
Mm-hmm.
But it is so relevant to any age group, I think. And, I definitely was like, oh my god, I wish I would have read this sooner. And we haven't mentioned it yet, but the story is set in kind of it's like a fantastical world. Mm-hmm. There's some world building around the characters. The main characters are three characters who all have an affinity for lowriders, and they want to open their own garage
mm-hmm.
to work on cars. Their own body shop. And off the bat, I was so excited and happy about the fact that the female character was the mechanic.
Yeah, mechanic extraordinaire.
Yes, a mechanic. So her name is Lupe Impala.
Yes.
And she's so awesome. And just the way that she is drawn, and her big hoop earrings, and just everything, her crop top, and it's just so awesome and amazing. I love it all. Flapjack Octopus is the fantastic car cleaner. He's like the one that
the polishing.
Yeah, the polishing
and, the, like, and all the like the waxing of the car.
Yeah,
really
detailing. Yeah, and he is an octopus, and so it's so cute in the one where they go to the was it the center of the earth or is it the one where he's in his water. Starts to evaporate
yeah,
and
to
so yeah and he's sitting in his little quote unquote bucket seat because he has to stay wet. Mm-hmm. And he's so cute. I loved him a lot. And then the third one is Illyrio Malaria, which is a of all things a little mosquito who he's the detailer like of inside of like
the
in the car
the
and
car.
And detailing the like
artwork.
Pinstripes and artwork and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. He uses
his beak or
yeah.
his little whatever it is that mosquitoes
yeah.
bite you
stinger,
with.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
to paint.
Mm-hmm.
Uh huh.
And it's said that there is not a steadier hand than his beak. It's
yes,
like it's
yes.
just so on point. This is Sarah and I love this book as well. At first, I was like, okay, it's two books. and then when I finally opened it, I thought, where is this going? You know,
mm-hmm.
as far I was like, what am I going to see? What am I going to read? Like, you know, because I flipped through the pages first and I was like, really take. I love the art. It was like really cool. But then I started to read the story and the first book is like a origin story.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So you kind of you find out how they got their car.
Yeah.
You find out who they are and what they're good at and their relationship between each other, their friendship,
mm-hmm.
which I really love. I love their friendship.
Yeah.
It's really, really nice. It's really well balanced. I love it. It would be a great book to read to your kids. And then you find the origin story of where the car comes from and how it came to be and why they were motivated to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that story. But I have to say that the second book was my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Which
is Lowriders to the Center of the Earth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The use of the culture. There's the cat. Who
yes, I was going to say their little cat.
Their little cat.
Cat
who,
yeah.
He's actually a god called
yes.
Tope Yote. Totally.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't say it, so I'm just like, I write it down to a way that
phonetically.
I
can
yeah.
Yeah, and then they meet the god of the underworld who has a bunch of eyes on his
mm-hmm.
chest, and
mm-hmm.
on their trek to find their cat in the underworld, they come across El Chupacabras,
yes.
La Llorona.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's just really cool. And I think the referee in the cuadrilateral.
Oh my god.
Caniflas.
The woman was. The La Llorona.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
oh my god. Did
yeah.
it just click?
Yes.
Oh wow.
I mean, she was crying all the damn time, but I didn't make the connection until right now. And they actually at some point like said, okay, Llorona or something, mm-hmm. but like it that's just like a quote-unquote term of endearment. My grandmother used to call me that all the time, or my mom used to call me... Actually, my mother used to call me Chiona, but... oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like I said, the referee from in the wrestling quadrilateral was Cantinflas.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And the octopus, the flapjack octopus,
yes.
he has this like
the
Chavo del Ocho hat,
uh-huh.
you know, the little.
And in one of the scenes, did you notice he had the doll?
Oh, yeah,
he
yes.
had the little doll.
Yeah.
I thought that was so cute.
So for you to tell me that the writer isn't Latino, I'm just like, man, you really hit a home run with this because she got like minuscule
yes.
details.
Yes.
I don't know how, but she did, and I was just like, it's like reading part of my childhood,
mm-hmm.
like Jen said.
Mm-hmm.
So I my favorite was the second one. The God of the Underworld, what was his name? It was Mictlantecuhtli.
Hold up, let me look at it.
But it's just
I can pronounce things better.
And the one part I thought was really awesome was like when they were going to the center of the earth, and then you see the Aztec calendar is like, I am the center. And one of the things I like is that, I don't know if you noticed, but there's like a cactus plant on his forehead. And I'm just like, that's kind of like a little nod because they call like people that are born in the U.S. that are from Mexican or Latino parents, they're like, when they don't speak Spanish, they call them, but tienes el nopal en la frente. Like you have, yeah. So I thought that was kind of a little nod to like American Mexican culture. Maybe I'm, you know, overthinking it, but that's what I thought. I thought it was a little nod to,
And the god of thunder, his name is Mictlantecuhtli.
Thank you. That was way better than mine. Yes.
Mictlantecuhtli.
Yes. With the TL pronunciation, I thought that was really cool.
This is why I'm adamant about saying Ixchlan instead of Ixchlan.
I know. She gets mad at me. Because the Magic the Gathering set that's out right now is Ixalan, and I say Ixchlan. I know.
Everybody says
it. I know that the X is not... The in Spanish or in whatever language that it is not pronounced like it is in English, but I just say it like that and she gets so mad.
I get mad. To be fair, I get mad at everybody. Yeah. And then he was trying to be like, he's just like, no, it's Ixchlan. And I'm just like, no, it's Ixchlan. And you can't tell me any difference.
And then the next set is Rivals of Ixchlan. So she has another 3 months of being annoyed and mad.
Well, like I said, this was an amazing book. Like I said, my favorite was the second book.
Yeah.
For sure.
I loved them both. I mean, both of these books you could read independently in and of themselves without any problems of understanding. And, you know, they do a good job in the second book of talking about covering what happened in the first book. But I loved that. The origin story of them and how they worked together to get their own garage, and then they went to space, and the origin of their car. I thought it was, I loved them both. I loved that both of them had such deep roots in lowrider culture, which is just by default Chicano and Latino culture. I loved that the characters, all of the characters, spoke in Spanish/English. I loved that there was a glossary in the back of both books, highlighting a lot of the Spanish words, and then also some of the Spanish cultural concepts and explaining that. I mean, the art is amazing. There was nothing about this book that I did not love, and even Kathy's little inscription to Jen in the front. Yeah. Oh my gosh, the first one was bajito y suavecito.
Bajito y suavecito.
I loved that, and then the other one was it gato? What was
you've,
it?
You've got to be
yeah, you've got
me.
To be
yeah,
kidding.
Yeah,
I thought that was so cute.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the what she wrote until I read the story.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my god, that's so cool. So yeah,
I didn't read the inscription until after I read the story. I was like, oh my god, that's so cute.
Yeah.
So just like when we read Monty Gomez. It's a luchador, and I was like, oh my gosh, I want all the swag. I want all the swag for these books.
I want Lupa's shirt.
Ugh.
Yeah, with the eagle on it.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
It kind of reminded me a little bit about Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I really want it. And I can get hoop earrings anywhere. So. I already own a pair, so.
It's really cute. It sort of, it reminds me of a little bit of the, that band, Spanish Batman or Latino Batman?
Chicano Batman.
Chicano Batman.
Uh-huh.
Their logo. It's sort of similar to her logo on her t-shirt.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So I'm sure it has some kind of cultural relevance that I still don't know. But it's pretty awesome.
I just loved these books. I'm so excited. If they continue with this story and with these characters, I just have so much good stuff to say and want to recommend this to everybody to read. If you have any kids that you want to get into reading, definitely this is a book that I would recommend. If you just want to read a cool story, no matter what your age is, I recommend this book. I loved it so much. So for me, if we're ready to actually rate the book, I would give it 3 conchas and a big cup of champurrado, anything else that comes along with that. I loved it a lot. There was nothing about it that I didn't like.
Well, I'm going to agree with Kristen. That's exactly my same rating. I really loved it. Like I said, it's a great book to read to your kids. I love the little glossaries on the bottom where it explains what the Spanish word that they were incorporating in the story meant. I think it's really well done. I love the artwork. So, yes, my rating.
The art.
It's 3 conchas and a cup of champurrado.
Yeah, same here. 3 conchas, a cup of champurrado, the origin of maíz. all of it. I absolutely adore this book. It is, if you've ever loved lowriders, and if you're Latino, you definitely have. You like artwork and just anything like about space or just like about mythology.
Yes.
Like just about the culture, la raza.
Yeah.
This is an excellent book, and I think it's really good, and it's something that you can easily read to kids, to siblings, to daughters, sons, whatever, or just anybody. It's such a great book.
Yes.
I highly recommend it.
Absolutely.
So, there is, I'm going to say that there is some information about getting the books in the back of the books I thought I saw.
There.
Oh, here we go. It's, actually, no. This says, for a list of sources and works cited, please visit chroniclebooks.com/lowridersinspace. That's actually kind of interesting. She lists all of, they list all of their resources.
She truly is a librarian.
Yeah. That's funny.
And but yeah, they've done via Chronicle Books. If we can get these books,
yeah,
in the
that's
store,
what I was thinking. I might want to reach out to her personally to ask her about getting them. Yeah. Oh yeah. So Kathy is a librarian it says she reviews graphic novels online for Lambda Literary and is a librarian for the Multnomah County Library, yes, in Portland, Oregon. And she does outreach. Oh my gosh, in the little skeleton of her. That is totally what she looks like.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's exactly
how
she looks
so
like.
Cute. And then Raul III teaches classes on drawing and comics for kids at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. They talk about, in the back of both of the books, they have some acknowledgments and author's notes. And I think it was in the first one where Raul talked about his choice for using the ballpoint pens.
Mm-hmm. This is a note from the artist. It says, I have been drawing for most of my life, and I love it because anyone anywhere can do it. Drawing requires the simplest tools. Cavemen used sticks with burnt tips to create detailed drawings of the lives they lived directly onto the walls of their caves. When I was a young boy, I would spend hours dreaming up worlds using ballpoint pens on paper bags or newsprint. I didn't have professional tools. I didn't need them. Ballpoint pens can be found just about anywhere. Sometimes I found mine on the sidewalk, or local businesses gave them away for free with their names written along the side. I still get them this way. I decided to draw lowriders in space with red, blue, and black ballpoint pens to revisit the excitement I felt as a kid whenever I drew. Where do you get your ballpoint pens, and what kind of drawings do you like to make?
I thought that was cool.
So you were saying, where can we find these books?
So if you wanted to order your own copies of Lowriders in Space or Lowriders to the Center of the Earth, you can go to chroniclebooks.com, and they have available, that's their publisher it looks like, and they have available the hardcover of Lowriders in Space and also the paperback of Lowriders in Space, and I'm assuming also both for Lowriders to the Center of the Earth, and the hardcover is $22.99 and the soft cover paperback is $9.99, and it's worth all of your monies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm definitely going to buy that hardcover one. Because, you can already tell how much I love this book because the binding kind of broke.
Yeah.
So I need a new one. So I'm going to get that hardcover, definitely.
Nice.
Yeah, I hope they come back next year to the Latino Comics Expo because I want to reach out to them and let them know that we reviewed the book and listened to our podcast and listened to the review, but definitely would love to see them in person and talk to them about how much we love it.
Excellent. All right, guys, so now it's time for On My Radar with Sarah.
All
from
right.
Comadres y Comics. And that's me, guys. So just a little thing. I was scrolling through our Instagram, and actually Coco wins Best Animated Feature at the Golden Globes.
Best Animated Feature? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I was posting a picture of our food and drink, and I ran across that post from Lalo Alcaraz on Instagram.
Yes.
So
oh, that's awesome.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Well deserved. Excellent, excellent. And on my radar is, you were just talking about the Latino Comics Expo. There's going to be one at the Brownsville, Texas. Tickets are $5 for the student discount and $8 for adults. It's on February 3rd and February 4th in Brownsville, Texas. It's at Brownsville Museum of Fine Arts, and it's February 3rd and 4th. Now, I wanted to hopefully maybe go, but the tickets are kind of ridiculous. And
to the actual expo, or you mean flights?
Yeah, flights.
Oh,
flights.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no, the expo, come on. I was like, dude,
road
great.
Trip.
Yeah. I'll sleep in my car. It doesn't matter. Road trip, I think, is 16 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And
You're going to have to sell me on the idea of Texas. I don't think Texas is until I'm literally there, and I don't want to be there.
Well, first of all, she doesn't drive, so it would be 8 hours. I actually love driving. I don't mind it at all.
And flight-wise, it was like $375. Mm. But then there's a 1 to 2 hour layover from Austin to Brownsville, which I cannot get around, wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
So it looks like I'm not going to go. But there's going to be a lot of great people. Alalo Alcaraz is going to be there. Mm-hmm. I know that for sure. Cool. I know Guille, one of the Hernandez brothers, but I can't remember which one.
Gilbert?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Or Beto?
No, I think it's Gilbert, yeah.
Well, no, they call him Beto.
Yeah, he calls that's his family nickname, Beto.
Oh, okay. yes, so he's going to be there, and so that's on my radar. What is also on my radar is season 2 of Legion is coming out in April, and there's going to be a future jump into the future, like I think a year into the future for the new season.
I never made it past episode like 2 or 3. I didn't know what the heck was going on, and I was like, I can't.
This is a thinking show.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that's.
But after I tried to watch it and was like, no, I'm over it, is when I read the book, and the book actually was like super good. I loved it a lot. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's the one that we kept trying to read for one of the episodes because there's a Latino, is it artist?
Artist, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember who it is. But
we could still do it.
But it's so good.
Yeah.
We did it for the discussion group, yeah.
Mm.
So reading the book actually made me want to go back and to watch it again, but it feels like work to me because of the thinking that I feel like I have to put towards watching it, so I just have put it off.
Yeah, it's definitely a show that you don't want to
You can't do anything else, yes.
But just you have to
pay attention. Yeah.
Little things that, you know, will make sense in future episodes kind of thing. There's a new actor going to be playing the Shadow King, and they have dropped Bryan Singer as an executive producer on the show.
Oh,
so.
Thank God.
So that's exciting news. Also, I wanted to take a moment to a nod of acknowledgement to Marvel's Runaways. mm-hmm. on Hulu. I believe it was the season finale, this last episode, and it was just mind-blowing. So hats off to them. They're doing a really good job.
Nice to know they're doing something right.
Right? So that was really cool.
Wait, who? Marvel or Hulu?
Yeah, Marvel. Marvel Hulu is doing everything right. But, yeah, Marvel.
And in the coattails of Jen's Chisme de la Semana on She-Ra, there is also a documentary on Netflix that's called The Toys That Shaped Us.
I keep seeing that. Every time I go on to Hulu, they recommend that for me. I'm like, oh, this sounds really kind of interesting.
It is amazing. I think it's a 3 or 4 part. They touch on the He-Man toys, which was a mind-blowing, eye-opening experience for me because my brother, he used to collect those, and how She-Ra was incorporated into that. So that's a really interesting episode to watch. They delve into Barbie, G.I. Joe, and what else? Oh, of course, the Star Wars. Oh, the very first episode is Star Wars. Mm. So there's a lot of very interesting things. Yeah. Mattel used to be on Hawthorne.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great stories it's super interesting. That's definitely on my radar, and it should be on yours, too, because I binged all four back-to-back. It was so good.
That sounds super interesting.
Yeah.
I grew up with Barbies, and I would steal my brother's G.I. Joe toys because... of reasons. But I never really grew up with Star Wars toys or the He-Man toys mm-hmm. because there were a lot of them were already like out of like
yeah.
when I was born they were out of date and all that stuff. I grew up with like
Barbie. They were already antiques.
Antiques. You don't give children antiques unless they're hand-me-downs or something.
Even yeah. then.
Well, I definitely remember when I was working for Diamond Comics, we went on our professional badges to Comic-Con. This was before it blew up, where you can just basically, like,
yeah.
end a work day and drive down to San Diego and get into
yeah.
the Comic-Con and park underneath the convention center. Those were the days, guys.
Yeah.
But I remember they were trying to reboot He-Man again, and we ended up, this was before they limited how many times you could enter a contest, so we just sat there and filled out a bunch of these little
yeah,
and we just put them all in there, and we actually won a statue of He-Man for our friend who drove us there.
Oh wow,
so that was
nice.
Really cool. And then
oh my gosh, somebody that I know in real life that has actually won something at Comic-Con.
And then because we filled so many out, they were raffling on many of these He-Man toys or statues and stuff. The same guy won again, but because he went up there to accept the first one, we had to switch our tags, and we had my brother wear it, and he went up to accept the prize.
Yeah.
But those prizes were, they were kept by the guy who actually drove us
yeah.
there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they, it was a really wonderful try at a reboot, and now, as a matter of fact, He-Man, the action figures has their own con. It's called Paracon. Yeah.
Really?
And all this information is on that documentary. There's some amazing information in
wow.
there. So if you want to be in the know, and if
these... Did they talk about My Little Ponies and Bronies and
those? Not yet. Okay. So I'm hoping there's going to be another season maybe that they're going to go into that. But G.I.
So
Joe...
The toes that shaped us, I think those are still kind of shaping out. So we'll see. The toys of the future or something like that.
Yeah, like the only original
My
Star
Little
Wars
Pony has been around for a while.
Yeah,
since the 90s.
Yeah, it has been around for a while.
I know, my little sister used to watch it all the time, and I would watch it with her. After the like sixth time I heard Twilight Sparkle, I was just like, I'm done.
I went to go see the latest movie with my niece, and it was only she and I. We went to like an 11 o'clock showing. We were the only ones in the theater, and I literally was on Facebook the entire
time.
So
wow.
I got snippets of the movie, but
you liked it, didn't you?
But I enjoyed what I saw, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. Like you said, you know, I was far too young to experience the original Star Wars toys. The only original Star Wars toys we have is a Rancor. that kind of monster that was in the pit when
yeah.
So that's the only one we have, but we were really in the thick of it all for He-Man, Barbie, G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
when
Barbie's still going strong.
Yeah, but there's the transitions that it went through. It's a really interesting in the documentary.
Yeah, that would be interesting, like the transition of Barbie and like how she was limited, and then they. Now she's like everything under the sun. She's a doctor. She's a
They totally touch on all of that. It's really cool.
Yeah.
One of the things that my brother and I did, we would go to the swap meets and we started collecting He-Man toys when we were in our when I was in my early 20s. So I mean that kind of stuff doesn't go away. Like I know I have boxes of like Battle Cat and She-Ra and Tila and the
She-Ra toy?
Yeah, I totally did.
Nice. I want to see that one.
Yeah, it was so cool. So yeah, I mean that it was a real great throwback. So that's on my radar, guys.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, this is Kristen, and I am doing Juntos y Fuertes today, but I actually also have an on my radar that I wanted to share with everybody before I went into my Juntos y Fuertes, and my on the radar is a comic book that came out this week called Exit Stage Left, The Snagglepuss Chronicles. Now, this book is an addition to, it's a DC book, and it is an addition to their line of Hanna-Barbera books that they've been printing and publishing over the last year or so.
That are surprisingly
super
good.
So I have not read Flintstones, but I've heard that it's really good. I've read Scooby Apocalypse. I'm not up to date, but what I read is really good. I really liked it a lot, and it's the one that I continued. I probably read all the way up to like about issue 11.
And I read the Jetsons.
Yes, I've heard Jetsons is really good.
Really, really good.
Yeah. So, just to give you an idea, I guess issue one of the Jetsons, like, revolves around a story of, like, Leroy trying to commit suicide or something crazy. So that's, that gives you kind of an idea of, like, these are, they're Hanna-Barbera characters, but the stories are super deep and, like, dark and really like interesting. So and Scooby Apocalypse is just like it sounds. It's the Scooby Gang in the middle of a zombie apocalypse. It's really well written. I can't remember who the writers or the artists are, but I highly recommend it. But this is Snagglepuss. For those of you who might not remember the Hanna-Barbera character of the big pink, what's a lion or?
It looks like a cat.
I think
a puma or something.
Some big cat. I don't know if it's a lion or a jaguar or something. But he's big and pink.
Leopard or something like that.
But this just a really quickly. Snagglepuss Chronicles is the story of Snagglepuss's story of him being a gay playwright in the early 1950s. I believe if he's in New York or I want to say that they're talking about Broadway on here, but so good so far. Issue number one is so good, he is a gay playwright where they've already introduced his wife in this first issue because he's living in the closet. But there is some underlying political stuff going on where they are trying to plan to basically out him to kind of get to some political end. It was really good. I really enjoyed it a lot, and I think that the writers are really trying to make it relevant to a lot of the stuff that's going on now.
Yeah. So I think it's a panther.
Yeah?
Pink.
Yeah. He's a pink panther? but definitely on my radar. Definitely check it out. Number one just came out this week, which is January, what was this week? January 3rd?
Yes.
And we do still have some issues at the shop. So, however, wherever your LCS is or however you attain your comic books, definitely, go and read it because you need to have, a gay panther slash lion slash
some
kind of big cat in your life. Juntos y Fuertes. I have on my list of things to talk about today is something that we all should support, and that is the Black Panther movie theater release coming out in February, which, what is it, February 18th? I don't know why 18th. Oh, 15th. 15th is the release, and I am so stoked about this movie. I cannot wait. I hope that I see every little girl dressed as a Dora Milaje member at Halloween this year. So I came across a GoFundMe today for a Black Panther party. There is a woman, Bryn Walker, who is local to Los Angeles, who is trying to buy out an evening at the El Capitan Hollywood.
Wow.
She wants to get together like-minded people, all comic book fans, Marvel fans, Black Panther fans, too. And I think I first originally saw her. I belong to Nerds of Color group online, and I'm not sure if that's where I originally got in contact with her or saw her post. But this GoFundMe is brand new today. Today is January 7th, and it was just posted. It's on GoFundMe, and it's just called Black Panther Party, and we can share the link on our Facebook. But it's been up for 3 hours, so it's super, super new. And she is trying to raise enough money, like I said, to rent out a night at the El Capitan. The goal that she has on here, apparently it costs $37,350 to rent out a night at El Capitan. But with that money is going to be included a full theater staff that will be there taking care of the group. And every person who buys a ticket gets a 20-ounce drink, a tub of popcorn, in a souvenir bucket. So you don't get, and you get to watch the movie. So one ticket, and it is the El Capitan. It's always awesome and amazing to watch a movie in this historical theater in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So one ticket is $28. And a pair of tickets, face value, is $56. So those are the suggested donations. You have, I guess, until when it doesn't say how long it's going to be up. It just started today. So, so far, seven people have donated in the last 3 hours. And there's also a button. There is a level for people who are out of town who won't necessarily be able to attend but want to support this awesome thing that she's trying to do. And there's a little level for $5 if you're out of town that you just want to support this. So I have followed her group of Black Panther. It's kind of a funny story. Somehow it just showed up on my timeline that she created an event on Facebook that was like, let's go to Black Panther together. And she was talking to her own group of friends, but she made the event public.
Oh, wow.
And so it showed up on my timeline, and I'm like, yeah, I'm interested. Well, and so I've been following, and apparently she was like, she didn't realize what her mistake was, and like thousands of people started responding. She's like, I don't know all you guys, but, let's go make a fun thing of this. So that has now evolved into her trying to do this. So just because she is, she's a Black woman who is super excited to see this movie, full cast of over almost 100% Black actors, where the Black women are super, awesome and,
powerful,
yes.
Like,
yes.
Oh, God, yes.
So, she really is, I think, going full force for this. So I definitely think it is worth it for us to include this on our Juntos y Fuertes of saying that this is definitely something that is worth some support. So GoFundMe, Black Panther Party. We will include the link on our Facebook. And definitely, I'm going to try to go. It's February 15th. 15th, that I think is the first showing, is on February 15th, and she wants to try to make it that very first show. So,
I'm down.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, totally.
I'd buy a pair of tickets.
Yeah. So what that's the I think February 15th, the 14th is a Wednesday, so that's a Thursday. I'm completely open, actually. So yeah, let's make it happen.
Let's do it.
Make it so. Awesome. That's wonderful. All right, guys. So I guess this brings us to the end of our show.
Yes, it does.
Dun, dun, dun. Any shout outs, any information that you guys want to put out there? I'll start.
Okay.
Since I'm already ready. this is Sarah, and I wanted to shout out, Interview with a Nerd is a podcast, that is also related to comic books, movies, and, the nerd culture, and, it's a very, very wonderful podcast. I really enjoyed it, and I was asked to review Coco on it, and I had a great time. So give them a listen. It's amazing. That's what I'm shouting out.
Cool. And we actually met Richard at our Quinta event. He came.
Yes, he came down.
He came. He's a friend of Sebastian's, who is the creator of Quinta. And he came and he met us, and he was such a cool, awesome guy, and now a supporter of Comadres y Comics. So definitely want to give our support right back to him.
Absolutely. Great guy. Really great show. Take a listen. I love it. I binged like 3 episodes at one time. Super good.
Cool. So I want to definitely shout out to Michael Hughes, our beer angel of the evening. Good job, Michael. We love you. And also, please follow us on Instagram at Comadres y Comics. And we will definitely reply and respond. We have an email, comadresycomics@gmail.com. If you have any questions or those sponsorships that you want to give us, we will definitely return any correspondence that you have.
Also, special shout out to our one iTunes review.
Please
yes. Contact us to get your prize. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And I don't have anybody to shout out to. This is Jen, by the way. And we, if you want to know more about what we're up to or more ways to communicate with us, you can follow us on Twitter at Comic Comadres.
Yes.
And we also have a Snapchat.
Yes, I love those Snapchat filters, and oh my gosh, I was looking at my Snapchat the other day, and I saw all my Latino Expo pictures that I took, and they were so awesome.
Nice.
So, yes, Snapchat. And one thing that I forgot to mention, I think it could follow under Juntos y Fuertes as well, Nathaniel Osolo, I'm pronouncing it
Osoyo?
Osoyo, yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say there's 2 L's, so Osoyo is the creator of Shadow People, who, which is a book that we reviewed. I believe it was episode 13, I think. I just shared it on our Facebook so that people would be able to go back and listen to it, but... we reviewed it, and it was a super cool, cute book, and he is going to be at Heidi Hill Comics doing an in-store signing on Saturday, January 20th. He will be there from 1 to 3, and he will have both his books, Shadow People, and then the newest one, what was the newest one? It's another cool...
augmented.
Yeah, like I don't know if you guys remember if those of you who did listen to the episode, but the Shadow People was an augmented reality book where you could download this really cool app, and you pointed your phone at the book, and it like came to life. It was like so cool. So I think they're both like that. I'm not for certain, but my Instagram here is taking a while to load. I'm having a hard time with my internet today. But the other one is Point of View. Where do you want to be? So that's the second one. And actually, Nathaniel gave us a copy of that to review, and it is in my stack of books that we are going to be looking at to do in the future here on Komalisi Comics, so we should do that soon.
Yeah, we have quite a few books.
Yeah. So yes, local author signing at Heidi Hill Comics, Nathaniel Osoyo, Saturday, January 20th, 1 to 3. And you know we love shadow people are here, so point of view I'm sure is amazing as well. So there's my shout out / Juntos y Fuertes, because we want you to support Latinx creators.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening. Thank you for the
idea. We came back in full force.
Yes. It's going to be like you can actually drive to Las Vegas or San Diego and listen to the full episode of Comadres y Comics. But thank you so much for your support. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.